I'm Eric Thiel, and we are live downstairs in our Steve Nelson performance space, joined by pianist Alon Goldstein. Mr. Goldstein is in concert tonight at 7:30 as part of the Alexander Tutanov Piano Series at the SOU Music Recital Hall. It's an interesting program of music from many different genres of classical music. Mr. Goldstein, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio.
Great being here. Thank you for having me.
I know just before we went on the air, Dr. Tutanov is here in our studio as well, sitting and observing, and you are very friendly. You have known each other for quite some time, I would imagine.
I think when we first introduced to each other, it felt like we were just picking up rather than starting a relationship. We were picking up the relationship.
It's a bit like a comedy duo almost, the two of you.
Great minds think alike.
The program here tonight is music of Scarlatti, Beethoven, Bernstein, Debussy. It's from all different corners of classical music. Why such a varied program? What is it that draws you to all of those different things?
It started a couple of years ago when I was asked to do a CD of 19 Scarlatti sonatas for Naxos, the CD label. And I had about a pool of 555 to choose from. And it was an incredible process. I came through, you know, maybe two or three that I knew before, and then others that, Jesus, wow, this is off the charts.
Yeah.
Incredible, absolutely mind-boggling. And I thought, wow, these are such varied pieces of music. Bach wrote his preludes and fugues as exercises for his students, and Scarlatti wrote these sonatas as exercises for his student, which was none other than the Queen of Spain. He chose good, the students. And I thought, this is a study in clarity and precision and transparency and accuracy and agility and dexterity. But I think above all, it's a study in imagination. Because it's such filled with imagination, and that's such a test for an artist. And I thought, oh, let's just try to put a program together where the emphasis on imagination is maybe even bigger than in other cases. And in every piece that I chose, I mean, of course, every great work of art has imagination, but there's an extra element. I mean, Beethoven's sonata here that I chose has an other name, quasi una fantasia. Oh, so is it a fantasia or is it a sonata? Mm. And then, you know, with the second of the Beethoven, when it says Moonlight, that's not a Beethoven name, but obviously the associations that came with it. And I'm going to share a few ideas with the audience today before I speak.
Oh, and interesting.
With Debussy, he gave titles to the works. Bernstein is Bernstein, yeah. You'll hear, and Ginastera, Argentinian. So there's an element of imagination, an extra element there.
I'm glad you started to mention the Scarlatti catalog. 555 or so of these things that are known sonatas. None of them conceived with the concept of the modern grand piano as we know it. And you have traveled the world. You have played many different brands, many different construction techniques of piano. Is it difficult to translate Scarlatti sonatas to the modern grand piano? And are there specific brands or models that seem to work better?
In terms of pianos, well, I think kind of an interesting thought. I think there are certain composers that write for their instrument, such as Bach or Mozart or Chopin, and other composers that wrote for a future instrument, like Scarlatti, Beethoven, or Liszt. I think Bach sits very well within his instrument, and Mozart as well. I think Beethoven on his instrument is a little, it's limited. He wanted this instrument.
Yeah,
he wanted
a
9-foot Steinway in front of him. And Chopin on a Pleyel sounds tremendous. Liszt needs something else. It's not to say one is better than the other, it's just the concept. And I think Scarlatti, you know, I read a wonderful book by a Scarlatti scholar named Kirkpatrick, and he said in the argument of whether to play it on a piano or harpsichord, he said, truthfully, there is no one instrument that is going to do justice to 555 extraordinarily different works of art.
How about one pianist?
One pianist. let's see.
I would love to hear something. Alon Goldstein is my guest in the studio today. He is in concert tonight at 7:30 in the SOU Music Recital Hall as part of the Tutanov Piano Series. There are still some tickets available. You can find information online at oca.sou.edu/events or by phone at 541-552-6348. What would you like to play for us?
Scarlatti.
Sounds great. Which number?
Number 11.
Okay. Ah, it is beautiful. Music of Scarlatti here on Jefferson Public Radio, played live for us in the Steve Nelson Performance Space by pianist Alon Goldstein, who is in concert tonight, 7:30, in the SOU Music Recital Hall as part of the Tutanoff Piano Series. Tickets and information at 541-552-6348. I don't know that I've ever watched anyone perform a Scarlatti sonata, certainly not that one. There is quite a bit going on. You mentioned the imagination of Scarlatti. You are crossing hands regularly throughout that piece.
That's funny that you say that. In the sonata, one of the sonatas that I played this evening, the number of crossing hands I've never seen in my life. And I'm posing a question to the audience every time I play that. If they can count how many times I cross my hands, they're going to get a free CD at the end of the concert. This is not a joke.
Wow.
I've never seen in my life something as circus-like as, you know, I want to talk to Scarlatti and try to understand who the hell can play that thing.
Can it be played without crossing
no.
your hands?
No.
Ah.
And not only that, there is, I mean, I don't want to say the number, you're going to hear it tonight.
Yeah, sure.
But there are sections in the piece that you can redistribute it because the two hands need to cross each other, not just one hand crosses the other, the two hands cross. So this one, I guess you can, but then, well, then why do you play it then? So what's the point? I mean, the point, it's obviously a visual piece.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm sitting in the radio and playing it. No one is going to understand.
It's perfect.
See. No, it's a really visual piece. It's something you need to see.
Yeah. I want to talk about the other end of the program that you've put together for tonight's performance, the Argentinian dance of Ginastera.
Uh-huh.
There's obviously some, as we just heard, there's some stoicism in the approach of a lot of Baroque music, Bach and Scarlatti. But there's a bounce. There's a bounce in the music of Ginastera, the Argentinian dances. It's a completely different feel and different way of playing and of thinking about rhythm and meter. Do you spend time in both worlds?
Well, it's interesting. Actually, I didn't think of that, but actually now that we speak, you know, Scarlatti, although born in what is now Italy, spent the second part of his life when he actually wrote all these sonatas, he spent it in the Iberian Peninsula.
Hmm.
So a lot of his music is a Spanish derivative, you know, the variety of Spanish rhythms. And now we're talking about Ginastera, and that also has this, you know, Spanish quality to it. So, yeah, of course, every music has its own. I mean, this is the Argentine dances is Spanish music 200 years later, where flamenco was there and lots of other various possibilities. And but of course, I spend time and, you know, listening to different music. One of the things I learned about Scarlatti is how much he tried to imitate street noise.
Really?
And I think it's more and more I realize with composers that they try to imitate life. And not only royal life, but also common men life. Mm. So there is, you know, some imitations of, you know, a palace and in terms of dances in the palace, but there's also just dances on the square.
Right.
And with Ginastera, I think it's even more so when it's, you know, very common and everyday common men kind of, you know, dances.
Hmm. Earlier, you mentioned that Scarlatti had done such a nice job of selecting his student.
Oh, yes.
So did Leon Fleischer. Who was his student again? Mr. Alon Goldstein, if I recall.
Right. Yeah.
Tell me about his approach to teaching and what you gleaned from your years with him.
Leon Fleischer. Okay, well, do we have until midnight? There is no end to speaking about Leon Fleischer, a truly legendary musician who teaches you to teach yourself. He has X-ray ears.
Hmm.
So when he listens to music, he immediately identifies the skeleton, the pulse, the DNA. And what he teaches you immediately is to ask the right questions. It's not necessarily, we don't need to have the same answers. That's why the music is still alive. But the questions many times are similar, looking for, as you said, the swing, the quality of the dance, the source of inspiration, the quality of sound you're after, the climax, you know, which hand, the balance between the hands, are you orchestrating it, which instrument, what color of sound you're looking for. So he constantly, you know, forces you to listen to yourself. And he always likes to play this idea that, you know, we are like multiple personality as performers. We have to be a person who makes all the decision before you play of how you want to, you know, how the piece is going to unfold, where you're going to aim, you know, what are you looking for, filling the audience. This is the first person, and the second person is the one executing, the one that needs to bring to life what the first person was doing in his homework before. Mm-hmm. And then the third person has to be the one sitting in the audience telling the first person is what the second person is doing, is what he wanted. But the idea is that you're constantly in dialogue as you perform, the dialogue with you know, how you perform right now, what is coming across, how is it unfolding. And also, you know, we have basically a sheet of you know, paper with black dots, you know, and composers telling us this is soft, this is loud, which means nothing. It's reading what's behind that and searching for the right color, searching for the right harmony. Why is this is the harmony? For example, in the Moonlight Sonata that I'll play today, it's in a key of C sharp minor. And I like to make the association that key is similar to color for a painter. For Beethoven to decide to write a piece in C sharp minor, which starts as opposed to C minor. C minor is the color of C sharp minor. Oh, this is like you're walking on the moon. This is, no one ever touched C sharp minor before. It's like you're painting a picture with a color that no one saw before. And that's when Beethoven chose to write this piece in that color. That probably was the first thing shocking to everyone, because it's like seeing a picture with a color that you, how did you get that color? It's not just brown. It's not just green.
It's plaid. It's
something, something that's never been experienced before. And that's Beethoven for you, always, you know, stepping in territories that no one ever stepped before.
Yeah. One territory that you have stepped into is a corner of the repertoire for four-hand. You have been a big proponent of four-hand piano pieces. What draws you to that kind of music?
I'm drawn to great music. So if it's four hands, or if it's with singer, or it's chamber music, I mean, there's some unbelievable repertoire, especially is it Mozart or Schubert for four hands. So I'm just drawn to great music. And also, you know, although my name is Alon, it doesn't have an E, but I spend a lot of time alone. So playing four hands, it's great because I'm not alone. I'm along playing with someone. So I love being with someone. Yeah. It's a lonely profession. I love that profession. I always say it's the best profession, but I not always recommend it.
What part of it feels best to you? You do a lot of solo performances, four-hand piano. Do you play with orchestra? Is there a particular style that you enjoy most, or do you simply enjoy the fact that you happen to play an instrument that can do so many things?
The thing that I enjoy the most is what I'm doing at a particular moment.
Sitting in our studio?
That's my favorite thing now. And in the evening, it's going to be in the recital hall. You're immersed in music that is better than could be played. Mm. It's music that survived for centuries for a reason. So when you immerse yourself in you know, greatness, whether it's four hands or solo or chamber music or an orchestra, you know, then it's truly a privilege. It's a life of privilege and something that you really feel grateful every day. Mm. Has a lot of difficulties and doubts and insecurities and uncertainties. But hell, I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah. Well, I'm so thrilled that you had time to visit with us today. It's great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Oh, great to be here.
Alon Goldstein is my guest today in the Steve Nelson Performance Space. He's in concert tonight at 7:30 in the SOU Music Recital Hall as part of the Tutanoff Piano Series. Tickets and information can be found online at oca.sou.edu/events, or if you'd just like to do it the old-fashioned way, you can call 541-552-6348. All right, what else would you like to play for us?
Some Ginastera.
Sounds great.
All right, so that's the Dance of the Showman Gaucho.
Thank you.
That is Alon Goldstein performing live in the JPR studio today. Music of Ginastera. He is in concert tonight at 7:30 in the SOU Music Recital Hall as part of the Tutanoff Piano Series. Tickets and information available at 541-552-6348. Mr. Goldstein, thanks again for coming by.
Great being here.
Thank you for playing for us. Sure.